The following is a paid program on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO, Licensed Insolvency Trustees. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO on VOCM.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Your Money with Nancy Snedden. I am Nancy Snedden. Thanks so much for tuning in today. On today's show, we're focusing on inheritance planning. Over the next decade, the largest intergenerational wealth transfer in Canadian history is expected to take place. The estimate, I think, will shock you. It's expected that we'll see $1 trillion transferred over the next decade. That's a very big number. So for bequeathers and beneficiaries, that means a lot to think about. So joining me to talk about this is Sherry Wicks. She's a partner with law firm McInnes Cooper here in St. John's, and Aaron Facey, advisor with Facey Financial, also here in St. John's. Thank you both for joining me today.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us, Nancy.
So guys, I mean, it is called the Great Wealth Transfer, and there's no wonder. I mean, $1 trillion. I can't even fathom that figure and the amount of wealth that's going to change hands, I guess, over the next 10 years. So we know Canada's high net worth population is getting older. And according to research, more than 40% of millionaires over 65 years old and made up nearly a quarter of a million households with over 65 have been the fastest growing segment of the high net worth market, increasing by more than 20% in the past 5 years. This wealthy demographic is expected to nearly double in size over the coming decade. And as baby boomers, these were born between 1946 and 1965, continue to reach retirement age. So this is also when the transfer of personal wealth from one generation to the next will take place. Of the approximate $1 trillion, roughly 70% of that is in the form of financial assets. So with such wealth about to be transferred, understandably, there are many questions that come up. The main one is, how prepared are these families for this change? And because with such wealth, there will be a lot to consider from a legal as well as a financial standpoint. I really like to get into some of the specifics around that throughout the show. But Sherry, let's start with, you know, why is it so important for these families to be legally prepared when it comes to this?
Thank you, Nancy. I suppose the most important thing is to at least have a plan. The impacts of not having a plan on a family and a family's wealth can be quite catastrophic. One of the most important things for a family to have in place, in my opinion, frankly, is not a will, but is power of attorney. Powers of attorney address that sort of gray area between life and death when we're physically alive, but we lack legal capacity to deal with our affairs. And sometimes that legal incapacity can last for a long, extended period of time. The other thing that we always do when we're putting a plan in place for families is to put an advanced health care directive in place so that family members know what an individual's wishes are with respect to their physical care and who's going to be entitled to make decisions if they aren't able to make them themselves. And then, of course, having a will. If you don't have a will, the government's written one for you called the Intestate Succession Act. It's inefficient. It bequeaths to prescribed family members, and it doesn't provide for any estate tax planning.
Yeah, so really important that you have a say in how your wealth, no matter how big or small that is, and you know, no matter how many assets you're holding, that you have some say in how it's handled at the end. So I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. And from a financial aspect, Aaron, like how important is it for people to think about this ahead of time?
Oh, well, I mean, just look at the numbers. You know, 70% of that $1 trillion is tied up in financial assets. Like, that asset shift is going to be, substantial. It's got to be planned out really well. And I'm excited, and I'm also half scared at the exact same time. But the plan has to be rock solid. Like, just absolutely has to be solid.
Yeah, no, I'm sure our listeners would agree with you that, you know, when you're transferring wealth, whether it's, you know, cash or assets or, you know, any other thing that you've got in your portfolio, you do want to plan for it to make sure, to both your points, that not only do you have a say, but that it goes to where you want it to go and that it's done as smartly with less an impact on your beneficiaries as possible and on your estate. So there's been lots of research done about this. And when it comes to leaving the inheritance, polls show parents feel the need to do so. Nearly half at 47% of those 55 and older say it's the right thing to do. And the majority of millennials at 55% believe it's a parent's obligation, in fact, to do so. So while the older generation feels it's the right thing to do as they prepare to transfer their wealth to their beneficiaries, there are some concerns. Other research shows that one-third at 32% of high-net-worth Canadians have fears about how their heirs will handle their inheritance, and nearly one-quarter at 20% fear that their children won't be able to pass anything down to their own children. So just over one-third at 36% say their children don't have the financial literacy to manage a potential windfall, and only one in five at 19% say that they have introduced their children to their financial advisor. About the same at 18% have taken them to a planning meeting with the agent managing their money. So despite this, polls do show that well over one-third at 40% want their heirs to continue to work with the same advisor or advisory firm that has managed their wealth. So Aaron, when you consider these statistics, are you surprised at all? What is your reaction to some of the concerns that the survey reveals?
Well, I tell you one thing that really struck me yesterday when I was reading through this is the 55% of millennials that believe it's a parent's obligation. I think that, as a father, my obligation is to make sure my kids grow up to be good human beings, and that's pretty well where that stops. If my wealth is there enough to help them get their education and stuff, well, that's fine. How I deal with my transfer wealth is really my decision, and there's lots of charities and other good organizations that could use that money if my kids have been sort of set. It does not surprise me that... I'm seeing that the millennial generation, or the generation that's younger than me, they're really struggling with financial planning and how to use wealth and how to use assets to sort of better themselves for the future. So it doesn't surprise me that parents are having these issues or thinking that, maybe they can't, they won't be able to manage this type of wealth transfer. $1 trillion, like you said, is a lot of money. It is a very frightening thought that is going to happen in a very short period of time. And as Sherry alluded to, there's so many structures that could be built to better protect the children. And, it's time for the baby boomers and these high net worth and anybody who's transferred inheritance to really sit down with the planners and figure out how are they going to adequately get it to their children and to the next generation and possibly the third generation in really efficient ways.
Yeah, I mean, the one that stood out to me was that, 36% said their children didn't have the financial literacy to manage a potential windfall. I mean, that's a really high percentage of people being concerned that they're transferring this wealth, but the recipient doesn't really know or won't know how to handle or deal with it. So I think from that perspective, it raises the concern about, what legal steps they can take to ensure that the money is managed to their wishes. So, Sherry, what can you tell our listeners about that? What steps should they take?
Well, Nancy, it all starts with a conversation. Every situation is unique. Blended families in particular pose specific challenges. Trusts are one solution that can help with concerns that arise with blended families and can address concerns over beneficiaries getting too much money all at once. But really, parents need... at an early age to start educating their children on financial matters and what their expectations are when it comes to money management. As children get older, parents are able to better assess whether or not they have the tools and maturity to deal with large sums of money, or if the parameters that are put in place in a trust need to dole out that money in a piecemeal manner with restrictions placed on the amount of money received or the purpose that it can be used for. But then I always tell parents as well that they need to be clear with beneficiaries on what their estate plan is. That can avoid hurt feelings when the parent passes away. But most importantly, it can avoid estate litigation, which can quickly deplete estate assets. You get into a brawl in a courtroom over what really mom and dad intended.
Yeah, and I think, Sherry, as part of a conversation it might be to have with your kids, it is an important one, because better to do that when everyone can sit down and rationally talk about it together and come to the right solution rather than have the parent pass and now there's siblings, like you said, that are battling out in court, which is not going to end well for anyone, really.
No, it's very interesting, I would say the parents of the baby boomers had this superstition that if they wrote a will, they were going to die. And so many refused to write their will until they were on their deathbeds or, frankly, lost the ability to do so. But for the baby boomer generation, there seems to be this sort of protectionist attitude. They won't want their children to know how much they're worth or how much they may get in the way of an inheritance. I'm not quite sure the psyche behind that, but I've certainly seen it quite a bit.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about why you should be introducing your kids to your financial advisor. Please stay with us.
Weekdays on VOCM, it's Open Line with your host, Patty Daly. Join the conversation each morning from 9 a.m. to noon on your VOCM. We get people talking.
This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden on the VOCM Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Money here on VOCM. I'm your host, Nancy Snedden, licensed insolvency trustee with BDO Canada here in Newfoundland and Labrador. Today's discussion is around inheritance planning, and joining me for the discussion is Sherry Wicks. She's a partner with the law firm McGinnis Cooper and Aaron Facey, advisor with Facey Financial. So we were talking about some interesting statistics in the first segment, and one of the surprising things was that so many people haven't introduced their children to their financial advisor. And, you know, we talked a little bit as well about how important it is to have the discussion about how you see your estate being planned out with your kids ahead of time. So, Aaron, did it surprise you to learn that so few are introducing their ears to their financial advisor or including them in the meetings with their advisor?
No, not really. I think it's been a problem, you know, for a while. As Sherry alluded to in the last segment, the baby boomer generation struggles with allowing or letting their kids into what's actually going on with their finances and what possibly could transfer down. So I think that has something to do with it. They're a little bit more, they've got some anxiety, I guess, towards, you know, my kids will know how much we have. But I also think that those generations struggle with actually finding ways to save money as well. So they're not proactively going to seek financial advisors as well as much as their parents' generation did. So I think there's a little bit of that as well. But no, it doesn't really surprise me at all. It's too bad and it needs to increase, but it doesn't surprise me, no.
And I think it makes sense, right? Like, it makes sense that they would introduce, if they've had a good relationship and they've had success with their financial advisor, that they would at least make the introduction so that the children could decide if it's a relationship that they wanted to continue. But can you share some of the benefits of doing that?
Well, the biggest thing is, as we talked about, there's $1 trillion that's gonna transfer down over the next, you know, 10 to 15 years. That's a lot of wealth. So, you know, to shift that wealth to another advising firm or to another advisor, and if that advisor is, you know, isn't skilled enough to manage, you know, a significant wealth transfer or really understands the plan that was put in place by the parents, and it doesn't matter if you're, you know, if you're ultra high net worth or high net worth or just the average Joe, it doesn't matter. It's still, you know, that plan was put in place based on situation. So I think it is really important that families look at intergenerational work with the same firm. It doesn't always happen. And, you know, in our practice, we do transfer sometimes wealth to other firms and we facilitate that. And that's sort of how it goes. But yeah, like in my opinion, and maybe I'm a little biased on it, but in my opinion, I think it is good to have a good family office plan with the same advising firm, as long as they're going to be around and they have a succession plan, right? Because that sometimes is also the case where mom and dad's advisor is no longer in the business and it's just completely somebody else and there's no relationship there, so.
Yeah, and we've talked before how important it is that you get a comfort level with your financial advisor because you're going to have, you know, really deep conversations about, you know, what your personal goals are and what you're trying to accomplish. So by getting that introduction sooner rather than later, you're going to get that feeling if this is the right person for you, which, as we said, is always very important. Some more really interesting research, you know, it shows that men at 75% are the lead financial investment decision makers. And this has been flagged as a concern because it's estimated that by 2026, which, of course, you know, is a short 5 years away from now, women investors will directly control approximately half of total personal wealth. As the number of women who are single, divorced, or widowed continues to grow, and the baby boomer women continue to outlive their spouse. So, you know, when we look at these statistics, and really they're generational, how important is it moving forward for legal and financial reasons that meetings do take place to ensure that both parties, you know, spouses are informed and aware of the finances? Because we've been talking a lot about the next generation and passing it down to kids, but, you know, there's a lot of situations where, you know, this wealth is going to transfer to the spouse, and the spouse may not have been involved before. So any advice there, Sherry?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we talk about when we're doing estate planning like that is, you know, some of the things that can be done from a tax perspective, like spousal rollovers of RRSPs and capital assets. So there's a bunch of sort of tax planning things that can be put in place. You can also discuss the selection of who the executor of the estate is going to be, because the executor of the estate can also be a trustee if you put a spousal trust in place in the will, and can be an individual who then can help the surviving spouse with some of those decisions. So you sort of institutionalize who's going to be the individual assisting the surviving spouse with managing the estate. And then also who's going to manage what's left after the surviving spouse passes away for the benefit of what children there are in the family household.
And Kira, you mentioned in the first segment too that some of the more difficult conversations are around blended families. And, you know, there's important challenges, I think, that they're facing. Who to choose as the primary beneficiary, how to divide the assets fairly, and speaking openly about their estate plan. So are you hearing this from your clients? Like, are these concerns real, like with what you're hearing from blended families?
Oh my goodness, absolutely. Absolutely. Blended families are probably the more challenging of estate planning files that I get involved with. Oftentimes there's children from the previous marriage. Sometimes husband and wife are bringing children from previous marriages. Sometimes husband and wife have children from previous marriages and then have children in their new marriage together. And so trying to balance what's intended for the surviving spouse to receive, and then also what's intended in the way of assets that the surviving children will receive. You know, sometimes in particular, I hear parents saying, you know, this basket of assets that I accumulated with my first spouse, I want that basket of assets to go to my children, not my second spouse. So there's quite a bit of planning that often goes into it. And also, even as I said at the beginning of the show, having an advanced health directive in place so that there's no fight at the hospital over whether the second spouse or the children of the spouse that's in the operating room gets to make the decisions on what happens from a physician perspective. Who do they take instructions from?
Yeah, and it can be a difficult one, and sure, you want to make sure that you're having the conversation with the person that you're pointing that to make sure that they have the comfort level and are going to make the decision that you want them to make there. So, yeah, I agree. Super, super important. So it is really important, I think, to have this open communication. And some of the benefits that I've read in researching for the show on communicating your wishes to the beneficiaries is it gives the heirs the ability to plan proactively and accurately for the wealth that they're intended to receive. It eliminates any element of surprise or shock among the beneficiaries and provides an opportunity for the giver to help their heirs prepare in advance and provide them with any money management skills that they think they may be lacking. Now, we talked a lot to you guys about the importance of estate planning. So I'd like to move into that now. So we discussed some of the concerns that bequeathers expressed in the research regarding the transfer of wealth, and you both offered some great advice about the importance of communication, especially when it comes to communicating your wishes and of course, estate planning. So let's talk about the importance of estate planning now. So how important is it to seek the help of a professional when it comes to estate planning, so especially for those who've accumulated a lot of wealth and many have several assets? So can you share, Aaron, some of the benefits of doing so?
Well, it gives, it gives an emotional sort of third party to help. So as the benefits need to transfer through the estate plan, you've got somebody who's been dealing with both parties. So they've been dealing with mom and dad. They know mom and dad's wishes. In a lot of cases, we've reviewed the will, and maybe we've reviewed the will with someone like Sherry, and we're in that fold. So it's kind of a bridge, to do so. But like the estate plan itself just gives a clear path of money and a money movement to the next generation. So it's just really important that people who have assets that they're going to leave, make sure that they're sitting down with people to make this plan.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And Jeremy Guinness-Gilbert actually has a really great article on their website that talks to the three top estate planning benefits. So what can you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess one of the most important ones is with an estate plan, you get to choose. So with being in the driver's seat, you get to decide who your beneficiaries are versus, you know, the Intestate Succession Act, which prescribes who those beneficiaries are. excuse me, you get to take into account tax planning measures that can reduce the tax bill payable on your death and thus increase the amount of assets that are available for your children. You get to choose how your children receive or other beneficiaries receive the money that you want to bequeath to them. So, you know, being in the driver's seat and being able to choose is probably one of the biggest benefits of an estate plan. You know, getting professional advice can save you money in the long run. As I said earlier, you know, there's things that we can do to minimize tax, but also minimize other liabilities and costs that may be incurred if you don't have a plan in place. Excuse me. We can also benefit beneficiaries. Again, with proper planning, we can provide mechanisms to help your beneficiaries save on taxes. We can also make sure that what transfer of wealth is happening does so on a creditor-protected basis so that, you know, creditors of your children can't access your estate funds. And probably most importantly, what I hear from parents is they want to protect what they're leaving to their children from potential divorce and marriage dissolution with their children.
Yeah, and you're right. There's so many things that you need to consider, not only who's getting it, but how is the best deal. And you mentioned taxes, which I know is a big one for people because, you know, many people don't understand what the tax outcome will be with things like inheritances. So we're going to talk about that a little bit when we come back. Please stay with us.
Join us for On Target, 1 hour in which Linda Swain examines topics that mean the most to you. On Target, weekday afternoons at 1 on your VOCM.
This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden on the VOCM Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Money. I'm your host, Nancy Snedden, licensed insolvency trustee with BDO Canada here in Newfoundland and Labrador. We're talking today about the transfer of wealth that's about to happen in this country. And joining me for that discussion is Sherry Wicks. She's a partner with the law firm McGinnis Cooper and Aaron Facey, advisor with Facey Financial. So that's Stephen. Talking a lot about estate planning and the importance of wills and health directives and all those things and transferring relationships with your financial advisor and having communication openly with your beneficiaries. But Sherry, some people may think, you know, I don't really have wealth, right? This $1 trillion in wealth, that doesn't really apply to me. I'm not someone who needs to have those discussions. But, you know, many people have things like RRSPs. They may have, you know, some investment. They may have own a home, some shares or investments, some even personal property like a boat or a art collection, which could be, you know, as simple as one or two pieces of art, or even a vehicle for that matter. Like everyone, I think, would have some sort of assets that they would need to consider with regards to planning for their beneficiaries, but also considering the tax consequences of all those things, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I am always amazed when I sit down with families and we start going over, you know, what assets they have. And I'll say, so we're dealing with $750,000 or $1.5 million. And they have this sort of shocked look on their face because a lot of the baby boomers are, you know, regular middle income households, and they didn't or don't feel like they've amassed a lot of wealth, but most have struggled and successfully paid off their mortgages, oftentimes years ago now, and they don't really appreciate the accumulation of equity in their home as housing prices have, particularly in Newfoundland, has skyrocketed over the last 15, 20 years. And so when you sit down and talk to them about those things, they come to realize that their estate is worth a lot more than they thought it was, even though they may not have a lot of money in the bank.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's like we've said before, Aaron, right? Like no matter what your level of saving is, no matter what your level of wealth you think you have, it's always important to sit down with a financial advisor to make sure you have a good understanding of exactly what the outcomes would be, regardless of the size of the wealth you think you're dealing with, right?
Yeah, well, just to, you know, to add some more sort of meat to the bone for what Sherry said, what is it, like 3% of the Canadian population is considered high net worth. So that's still even 97% of that, the Canadian population, that has to do some planning. Like a lot of that $1 trillion is tied up in high net worth. Yeah, okay, so we can agree to that. But a lot of it is not. And as Sherry just mentioned, I've yet to sit down with a baby boomer client that didn't have some form of an estate that was being left to a beneficiary and that needed to have some planning. Maybe it's not as in-depth tax planning. We don't need a CPA behind it, and we can do it through beneficiary designations, but it's there. And Sherry's absolutely right. People need to really sort of wake up is a strong word, but like they need to really sort of concentrate and focus down on what could happen and how that wealth is going to transfer. So I think that was a great topic.
And I think, too, something that I found really interesting with regards to this topic is, you know, some people feel that it's more rewarding to pass along gifts earlier to their kids, right? So the thought of like a living inheritance. And this allows the bequeather to witness the joy and, you know, the security that they're providing their loved ones while they're actually still alive. So they're actually sharing their wealth with their loved ones prior to their passing. So there are benefits to doing this. You can save on taxes and fees. You're simplifying and reducing the size of your future estate. You're potentially avoiding estate administration taxes like probate. And you're reducing the potential for family conflict over your estate after you're gone. So while this may seem like the best case scenario, there's also some things that you need to keep in mind. Your own financial health or retirement. So will this gift impact your own financial health while you're still living? You need to make sure you're providing for yourself while you're alive as well. You're giving it to someone else, so you won't have any remaining control over it, and you can't get it back. So you really need to be prepared to accept that there's no option if the recipient chooses to use proceeds in ways that you're maybe not approving of. So that being said, you do have options to ensure the longevity of your gift. Assets don't necessarily have to be given to beneficiaries in a lump sum. So Aaron, what can you tell our listeners about this? Like, what are the options that they have for living inheritances, and what should the considerations be beyond what I've talked about?
Well, this is, for my client set, Nancy, this is a big conversation, and it happens for me daily. I'm a very big believer in living inheritance for a number of reasons. You know, you get to see that money working. Not only that, we've talked about it before, you can actually teach your beneficiaries or your heirs how to manage money in sort of smaller doses, and that can increase over time. You know, for the most part, for my clients, I'm making recommendation that, look, hey, you've got enough money to survive. If you want to do some generational transfer today and watch your kids and help your kids use it wisely, or your grandkids is another a big thing for grandparents, then this is a really good way to do it. Leaving it on debt is something that a lot of people want to do, but you don't get to see the value of it. And I think it's a huge piece for anybody that can afford to do it, to watch their kids and their grandkids use their money wisely. I had a family in here a couple of weeks ago. They had two pieces of property right next to their cabin, and it was for the kids. Oh, we're going to leave it to them when we die, and then they can figure out who's going to build there. And I said, well, why don't you take some of your money and help them build a property now? And instead of them staying in your cabin, you can actually enjoy each other every weekend and going forward. And they kind of looked at me and went, huh, we never really thought of it like that, nor could that's not we could afford it. So, you know, I'm going to push to the side all of the tax benefits and all that, because that's just sort of aspects that you know, Sherry's firm and BDO, you know, could provide. For me, it's watching parents provide that level of security and safety for their kids, and then bringing the family back together and being able to join each other because of their success. I think that's the biggest thing that people have to really look at.
Yeah, it could be a real feel good for the family, right? To have
absolutely
all that while you're all there to enjoy. To your point, so Sherry, from a legal perspective, what do you want people to know who are considering a living inheritance for their kids or grandchildren, for that matter?
Yeah, well, Nancy, some of them you've already touched on, which is loss of control over the assets. And the potential negative ramifications, if there's a life event that parents aren't expecting, that impacts their own financial health. But there's, I think it's sort of a middle ground to all that too. I mean, you can have living trusts in, put in place so that now there's specific tax considerations for living trusts, but you know, you can put those assets into a trust and then you still maintain some control over how the assets, the funds are doled out and to whom and how it's invested in the meantime. You know, so there's those options available to people as well. Those options are particularly helpful when you talk about people that have, for example, family businesses, and they're looking at how they're going to transfer the business on their death, and they may have, you know, their children or even their grandchildren working in the business. So trusts can be very helpful for that sort of process and can save an awful lot of money if done correctly.
Yeah, I'm glad that you you brought up the idea of a trust. You could also set up an annuity, right, which gives you the ability to have a little bit of control over what you're doing. So what do you think the benefits are of doing things like that versus not setting it up in that way and maybe just transferring it through a living inheritance without those restrictions?
Yeah, so I'm not going to repeat some of the things that Aaron said, which I completely agree with. Those are what I would call the warm and fuzzy thing reasons why you would do it. But there's also, you know, there's specific types of trusts like alter ego and joint partner trusts that provide, you know, specific benefits to the spouses. It avoids probate fees and taxes. The biggest one that I see, particularly with business owners, is it provides privacy, because when you probate your estate, those documents are public. The world knows how much you were worth and what you owned when you died. Whereas if you've transferred your assets into a trust before death, that never becomes public. And it also gives people the ability to immediately deal with the assets without having to wait for the court probate process. So there's those other sort of, I call them a little more intangible benefits that are really important to some people, depending on their circumstances.
Yeah, and we've talked already a little bit about, you know, privacy, and that's sometimes the reason why people aren't having conversations even with their, you know, their family who are going to inherit. So the fact that something like a trust can keep this private and from, you know, going to the broader public about your wealth, I'm sure would be very appealing for many. So when we come back, for those of you who have accumulated wealth over your lifetime, we've already said, you know, discussing what the wealth with the family and how it will be distributed can be really uncomfortable. So seeking guidance from a third-party professional when it comes to that, you know, how do you decide who that should be if you haven't had those conversations already? We're going to talk about that when we come back. Please stay with us.
Weekday mornings from 5:30 to 9. Jumpstart your day with Jerry Lynn Mackey and Ben Murphy. Newsmakers, traffic, weather, and more during your VOCM morning show.
This is Your Money with Nancy Snedden on the VOCM Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Money here in VOCM. I'm your host, Nancy Snedden, licensed insolvency trustee with BDO Canada here in Newfoundland and Labrador. Joining me for discussion today is Sherry Wicks. She's a partner with the law firm McGinnis Cooper, and Aaron Facey, advisor with Facey Financial. So we've been talking about the great wealth transfer that's going to happen here in Canada over the next decade. And at the top of the show, we touched on the importance of communicating with family members and being open about what your wishes are after you're gone. So for those who've accumulated great wealth during their lifetime, this can become an even bigger challenge for so many reasons. So let's talk about that a little bit now. Discussing wealth and what will happen after you're gone, we've said, can be very uncomfortable. And, you know, for all concerned, really, on both sides of the fence, whether you're the person leaving the wealth or the person that's going to be receiving it. But as difficult as it may be, you know, this show has told us how important it is to plan and how important it is that we really talk about how that wealth is going to be transferred and what type of inheritance is going to be set up. We want to make sure, of course, that our final wishes are going to be honored. So when it comes to approaching such an important and often complex subject, you really want to consider the guidance of a third-party professional, someone who has the expertise, the understanding, and can be neutral, right, can provide that neutral perspective to help steer what can be an emotional conversation. So when it comes to these types of conversations, Sherry, what are your advice to listeners? When should you consider hiring a third-party professional or executor?
immediately. You know, that's my first response is immediately. And it doesn't really matter. I know we've been talking about the transfer of wealth, but it really doesn't matter what point you are in your life's journey. You need to, young or old, we don't know when we're going to lose mental capacity. It could be a car accident that leaves you in a coma or with permanent brain damage. Or it could be things that happen usually later in life, like strokes, dementia, and other mental illnesses. But once you lose that capacity, the door is shut tight, and there is no ability at that point to make an estate plan. You have to have mental capacity to do it. And so, do it early and do it often is what I tell people. I tell people that, after you've written your estate plan, every 5 years at least, you should be taking it out and reading it. And by the time 10 years have passed, there's likely changes. There's things that have happened in your life that require amendments to your estate plan. So, the answer is immediately, Nancy.
And I think, some people think, Sherry, when they're planning for an executor, that they assign a family member to be the executor for their estate. And I guess there's pros and cons to that, right? I think sometimes people underestimate the obligations of an executor, right? The money, the taxes, the legal filings. I mean, that can be really intimidating for some people. And even more so, when there's great wealth or multiple assets involved. So when it comes to appointing that executor and considering all those things, Erin, who do you think should be considered for this role? Is it a role that you'd want to turn to your financial advisor for example, or legal counsel, or would you want both involved?
Well, there are some conflicts of interest with financial advisors, especially if they're managing the assets. So it can be considered a fairly constrictive no-no. So I would definitely, if somebody's looking to appoint, it would be to a professional, whether it's a lawyer or a professional service that does that would be better than your financial advisor. But sometimes kids can, can make really good beneficiaries, especially depending on their background. I find that the biggest issue with putting a child in is, especially if there's a number of children, is that there can create conflict between the children, because the executor in some cases can take on maybe a little bit of a power complex and I'm controlling everything, so you just sit and tighten and wait, which can cause some issues where a third party, although it'll cost you some money, won't cause that at all. You'll deal efficiently with that individual and go forward. But I think it's really important that, parents, no matter who they are, pick the right one and really give some thought to it. And, and just to go back, it comes to what Sherry said in the beginning of this segment. I think it's about being prepared. I think everybody has to, you have to prepare yourself for these unforeseen circumstances, and just being prepared and including a pick of the right beneficiary or what is believed to be the right beneficiary is just part of that process.
Yeah, and I think, too, when we're looking at who the executor should be, there's a process to planning for that, right? So, Sherry, can you take us through what the process looks like from start to finish in planning for who this executor will be and assigning this executor?
Yeah. I mean, who the executor of an estate is going to be is something I spend a fair bit of time talking to people about. I'm amazed at how many people come in to see me, and they believe it to be some sort of honor or privilege they're bestowing upon someone to name them as the executor of their estate. And I disabuse them of that notion fairly quickly and explain to them what the work is that's involved in it, and how critically important it is to have the right person in terms of skills to be able to perform that function, even with the assistance of professionals, because invariably executors are going to have to hire lawyers and accountants to assist them with the administration of the estate. So at the start, I always tell people to be conscious of the skill set and also to name alternate executors so that if the person you've appointed isn't able for whatever reason, be it death or other health issues, to be able to be your executor, that you have alternates named. The executor, really, their job is to monetize the estate and to distribute the assets pursuant to the terms of the will, and they'll need assistance from professionals to do that. I also talk to family members about what it costs, what it entails to be an executor, and discuss with them putting right in the will what the compensation is going to be for an executor. again, people oftentimes believe it's this gift, this privilege you're bestowing, and they don't even think about, well, they're going to do it for free, aren't they? And I say, no, no, they may choose to do it for free, but our Trustees Act says that they're entitled to compensation for doing this thankless job, and maybe you want to put right into your will what you want that compensation to be. So whether you have a family member do it, or if you hire a professional to do it, you know, there's lots of trust companies and law firms, ours does as well, will act as an executor for an estate. No matter which way you go, there's going to be a cost to that service for winding up your estate.
Yeah, and you know, I think because people do underestimate the work that's involved in being an executor, they may, to your point, think, you know, it's just something that is an honor and that people would do for free. But it is important with the work involved that there is actually compensation for the people. It's a time-consuming task, and not that people wouldn't be honored maybe to do it, but it's definitely something that's going to take some time. And to that point here, just before we move on to final thoughts, you know, if you have been appointed an executor and, you know, you thought it through and you've agreed to do it, but sometimes it can be overwhelming. So is it possible then that the executor can reach out for assistance?
Oh, yes, and most often do. You know, executors at the very least are going to have to hire legal counsel to make the application to court for letters of probate. That's the first sort of order of business that's required in order to be able to move forward with winding up and liquidating the estate. So absolutely, you're going to need a lawyer. You're going to need an accountant to assist with, you know, the final tax returns and if there's any tax planning that can happen after death. You may also need the services of, you know, a real estate agent. If there's real properties that have to be sold. And of course, you're going to, if there's any wealth on deposit, then you're going to need the services of a financial advisor. And to Aaron's point earlier in the call, I really do recommend that beneficiaries, at least at first instance, continue to use the financial advisor that their parents used. They have familiarity with the plan that's been put in place. They may choose to change to someone else later, but for the immediate term, I usually recommend that they continue with the existing financial advisor. So yes, absolutely, you're going to need professional assistance. Can't do it without us.
Great. Thanks for that. We really had some great discussion today, guys, and some really great advice for our listeners out there and giving some things for them to think about, I think, when it comes to their estate and how they should be planning. But we've got some time now for some final thoughts. So, Aaron, I'll start with you. If you could leave our listeners with a final thought today, what would it be?
I think it's a pretty common theme for me when we get when we do these shows, Nancy, but it's to start the plan, to be prepared. Right, have the conversations with the professionals like our firm and Sherry's firm, so that your plan is done. It's done early, and you have a base where you can readjust if needed, as Sherry alluded to earlier. So many people are not doing that, and they're waiting until a catastrophic event happens, and it's almost too late to really sort of do all the I'll call it gray area planning. You know, where you can have conversations with your kids and the heirs. So, you know, just start to have conversations. That $1 trillion being put back into the system in the hands of people that maybe not be ready to handle it, it really scares me. And I really encourage people that are listening to this show that if you are leaving the state to get professional, seek professional help so that that's managed well. It's not just for your family. It's also for the health of our fiscal system as well. Here in Canada, I mean, we don't need any more pressure on that system. So please just seek the advice and let's start to put some good plans together so that our fiscal system sort of continues to expand throughout the country as this transfer happens.
Well, thanks so much for joining me today. And if people did want to reach out, Aaron, and have a conversation, what's the best way to do that?
The best thing is, you know, you can find us on online. We're 709-754-2143 is our number. We're the big red building across from CRA on Empire Avenue, so it tends to be a good one for people. But as always, just find us and reach out, and we'll just start having a conversation and see where we go, and we can help bring in people like Sherry and you know, accountants and stuff if need to be. So just reach out, and let's start having the conversation.
Great. Thanks so much. And Sherry, if you could leave our listeners with a final thought today, what would it be?
I suppose, you know, really, I think it's important for people to understand, A, that having an estate plan is so critically important, and B, that no one knows when their number is up. No one knows when they're going to lose their mental capacity. And so it's critically important while you have capacity to make a plan. And then, you know, estate planning is not a do-it-and-done proposition. It's a life's work, I say. You know, as your life circumstances change, as you move from having minor children to adult children to married children to grandchildren, there's going to be a need, if you still have capacity, to update your estate plan for those changed life circumstances.
Great. Well, thanks for joining me today. And if people did want to reach out to get some advice, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can contact me through the McGinnis Cooper website, mcginniscooper.com. They can reach me there. They can reach me on our phone. Line is 722-8735. And, of course, you know, they can get my email address off of the website as well. I'm happy to respond to emails.
Great. Well, Dan, thanks for joining me today. Really great conversation. And I also want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. If you have a comment or question or topic you'd like me to cover here on Your Money, you can email me at yourmoney@bdo.ca or give me a call at 800-563-8337. Until next week, I'm Nancy Snedden. Stay safe and be well, everyone.
If you have a question or comment for Your Money, send an email to yourmoney@bdo.ca. This has been Your Money with Nancy Snedden of BDO, Licensed Insolvency Trustees, on VOCM.
The proceeding was a paid program on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.